Hi, and welcome back to the CIO Show. I'm Station Editor CIO. Was COVID-19 really as transformative as many people, especially vendors, suggest? Or was it more like a scramble, still demanding a proper reset of strategy and priorities to extract real value from new and ongoing technology investment? I guess the real answer probably lies somewhere in between. A 2020 report by McKinsey, how COVID-19 has pushed companies over the technology tipping point and transformed business forever, notes that while there have been giant digital strides taken, especially in APAC, many senior tech leaders have expressed doubts about the degree to which many of the changes will actually stick. Worryingly, while 50% of tech leaders surveyed by McKinsey said they expected to maintain COVID levels of spending on cybersecurity, 27% said they wouldn't. And there were similar proportions citing things like cloud migration, investment in advanced analytics, et cetera, as areas they didn't expect to sustain at current levels. And joining me now are Alexey Goldov, associate partner with McKinsey's technology practice in Australia, focused especially on financial services and telecommunications. Alexey, welcome to the CIO Show.
Thank you for having me here. Hi, David.
And Dr. Ian Opperman, chief data scientist with the New South Wales Government and industry professor at UTS. Ian, welcome back to the CIO Show.
Great to be here. Thanks, David.
Now, Ian, I thought we'd start off with you talking through with us some of the changes that you've ever seen in terms of how the New South Wales government builds and manages digital systems to improve insights and, of course, service delivery over the past 18 months.
So thanks for the question, David. New South Wales has continued its journey to create a more citizen-centric, customer-centric government. In fact, New South Wales has the goal of being the most customer-centric government in the world. Which is an admirable goal. A couple of important points. It's customer, not citizen, and it's customer-centric. Part of that has been the continued drive towards creating joined-up services for customers of New South Wales, and the creation of the Department of Customer Service was all about trying to join those different services up. So we talk about life journeys, birth of a child, death of a loved one, moving to New South Wales, getting a job, those sorts of things where there are many touch points of government, and increasingly connected with state and Commonwealth. COVID certainly, first of all, put a whole lot of sand in the gears of that customer reform, those service reform, but it did show that there is real value cross-government, there's real value in use of data, insights, and the value of getting back to that creating joined-up services. So what we've seen over the last 18 months is a somewhat change in the appreciation for the value of data across government, and then an increasingly accelerated desire to create more joined up services. So across the world that I get to either participate in or watch, I've seen a lot of heavy lifting being done by Greg Wells, the New South Wales government CIDO, who has taken the heavy burden of creating those services. And what I've seen, what I've been looking after, is the increasing use of data across government for analytical and insights purposes.
Do you anticipate any pressure sort of going forward to maybe pull back? I mean, obviously, you know, the New South Wales government and many other organisations have had to put enormous resources and effort into enabling these digital systems to keep the show on the road throughout the pandemic. Do you think there's going to be any pressure on, you know, for you to pull back going forward, you know, sort of speaking to the theme of this episode of the CIO Show?
So there was Minister D'Amelio was successful in establishing something called the Digital Restart Fund prior to COVID, which was a pretty impressive $1.5 billion to help New South Wales accelerate in terms of what it's trying to achieve in terms of smart systems, smart infrastructure, smart places. And there was a big chunk of that set aside for increased capability in cybersecurity. In the last budget, there was an additional $500 million put in, so all up, roughly speaking, $2.1 billion. And what I know is that fund is really, really heavily subscribed to. There are lots of parts of government who are really pushing hard, not for new laptops and new bits of IT kit, but to really transform the way they're doing things. And there have been some really innovative projects that have gone through. So as always, there's finite dollars, there's finite resources, there's finite capability to do things, but at least from a desire to move forward, that desire remains. And certainly cybersecurity is an important aspect of that desire to do capability uplift and to do things differently.
Yeah, sure. And Alexey, throwing it over to you, I mean, just referring to this McKinsey report that I mentioned in the intro, I mean, it seems as though that experience that Ian's related with, certainly in terms of what appears to be fairly entrenched resources to ensure the sustainability of these digital initiatives, they don't necessarily exist across the board, right? There definitely is concerns, and we've spoken about this recently as well, about, you know, organizations' ability to maintain the momentum.
That's correct, David. And it's if we're talking about talent, for example, during pandemic, we clearly see a massive problems with it, attrition of the talent and with getting talent on board, especially for the organizations that are, let's call them, less digital native. So not for, you know, the Googles and Facebooks of the world. They're obviously slightly easier because they're technology lighthouses. Even by the way, we find it interesting for the public sector, like where Ian is coming from, it's slightly easier because that's way more purpose-driven employment these days happening. So like actually people want to work for government, especially for the likes of New South Wales government, which is great. But at the same time, for the more of an established old school organizations, it's much harder to attract technology talent. If we talk about the talent and sustainability of the talent as the biggest enabler for the changes that were introduced during COVID, it's probably one of the elements that their organizations are struggling in the last, especially year and a half, and will continue potentially struggling in the future, because it's very hard to attract and retain digital talent and technology talent, especially in areas like cybersecurity, especially in areas like data analytics and cloud, for example, like more of a cutting edge areas, particularly for the organizations that are less, technology lighthouses, or it's even easier a little bit in public sector these days, because of the purpose-driven employment, but it's much harder for the organizations that are, more of an old school type of big businesses, incumbents, but less of a technology lighthouses.
Yeah, well, sure. I mean, talents is a huge enabler or a fairly restrictive element in all of this. I just want to run through a few of the headlines that I thought, some of the top statistics I thought were very interesting from this recent report that I mentioned at the beginning of the introduction to the show. We've got 63% of respondents reported significant changes in customer needs expectations. 62% of respondents said that they expected changes related to this would stick, with 18% saying that they wouldn't. 93% reporting changes in remote working collaboration predictably. 54% saying that those changes would stick. 23% saying they wouldn't. 34% respondents saying they saw significant changes in cloud migration, or 54% saying this would stick, with 27% saying it wouldn't. I thought particularly notable was the fact that we had 53% of your respondents saying they expected to maintain COVID-19 levels of spending on cybersecurity, with 27% saying that they wouldn't. I mean, that really jumped out at me as very surprising and perhaps indicative of, you know, the importance of this conversation at the moment.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation. And just one small comment, that this survey that you're citing is a few months old. So I think if you're asking these questions now, there might be slightly more tilt towards respondents being a little bit more optimistic in terms of the which changes will stick.
Well, it's a good point, isn't it? I mean, 2 to 3 months during COVID.
Correct. Exactly. But at the same time, if you look at the, like, I actually agree with you. And I think the cybersecurity spending, the 27% of respondents believing that the change will not stick, I think some of them actually might think that it might be even more. And the reasons why, first of all, obviously the cybersecurity requirements for the post-COVID era will be different. They're not only more spending, just bulk spending is higher because you have a very different environment, but also other changes. For example, the cloud migration will actually drive very different approach to cybersecurity. So you'll actually have to think about it completely, like it's differently. And it's not only pure bulk of, you know, investment, but it's also like it's more complex. It's more important for the organization going forward. So I actually think it might be even more, the increase of spend might be even more than during COVID. So this is what we can see very, very quickly.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you must have found that quite startling yourself, Ian, that 27% number.
Yeah, if people think that there's going to be a drop off in spend on cybersecurity, they really need to look up and have a look outside at the outside world. I mean, we have seen the world change quite dramatically. So not only do we need our systems to be reliable through just normal sort of fault tolerance, but we also needed to be increasingly reliable to uninvited attention from outside players. Yeah. And every organization I'm involved in, every single organization, we're talking about improving our cyber posture. We're talking about if the world was a different place and our organization was more attractive as a target, what would you do? And having those sort of conversations, no one is talking about reducing spending.
Yeah, you wouldn't think so. Another line in that, sticking with you, Ian, another line in that McKinsey report, just over half, 49% of respondents reported significant changes around the use of advanced technology in business decision-making, 35% saying these changes, investments wouldn't stick. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about that as well, given you know, your special interest in and you know renowned expertise, as you've alluded to, in you know working with machine learning and artificial intelligence. That would have, must have struck you as well.
Yeah, that is quite surprising. But what I think it might reflect is just the ringing hype cycles that we go through with regard to data analytics and AI.
Yeah.
There was a pretty large peak of hype around sort of 2016, 2017, and then we went down. And then what I saw, at least going to conferences and speaking at different events, is that in the beginning of 2018, we were talking about going back to fundamentals. People got the fact that data analytics were serious and important, and we had to go back and re-ensure that we had the fundamentals right. Data quality, data governance, ways of handling data, ways of interpreting. So data analytics as magic was gone. It was back to the more fundamental reality of data analytics being a very useful tool for seeing things. 2019, we were getting a little more hyped up again. And certainly what we saw in 2020 during the beginning of COVID was just how powerful data analytics could be, how powerful the use of data could be.
Yeah.
So again, if you consider that sort of a next little mini hype cycle, we might be back at that point of a next level of appreciation of the value of use of data, use of analytics, use of machine learning. We might be going back to a higher level, but still back to some more fundamentals around we need to understand how to do this properly. We need to understand how to interpret results appropriately. Mm. Whilst with a general uplift, it might be that sort of a mini valley of despair going back to the whatever the plane of value creation is. So I don't think it's, so personally, I think we have continued in our appreciation of the value of data analytics, but we just keep recalibrating in terms of the fundamentals and getting those things right.
We enable any organization to use any technology. We help all companies become technology companies, protecting the identity of both workforces and customers, connecting the right people to the right technology at the right time. Okta, one trusted platform to secure every identity in your organization.
And in conversations that you've been having with your peers, do you think that this is going to be a particular challenge for a lot of CIOs to convince the CEO, convince the board, the merits of keeping the pedal to the metal, as it were?
So that's a really interesting question. I mean, I only really get to see the world of government these days in terms of use of data. And I think the argument is one around the value of data. One of the things we're doing at the moment is bringing to life an AI assurance framework. So we are convinced the value of data, we're convinced of the value of machine learning. We're now talking about how you would assure the use of AI in an appropriate way, which really is just a different point in the journey of data sharing and use to look into it. Mm. And we've just finished fairly broad consultation, transport, health, justice, family, community services, education. Everyone is saying we're using data, we're using more sophisticated machine learning. We'll even call it AI because it's that level of sophistication. Yep. So it's about, again, in this case, building appropriate frameworks that contemplate data quality, bias, and such issues. But at least what I'm seeing is that everyone within at least New South Wales government, I haven't come across anyone who's skeptical that conversation is over. It's really about appropriate use and building the governance and the frameworks and the systems in place. So I think New South Wales government will be okay. But I honestly can't speak for telco or other folks or other parts of the industry sector.
Yeah, no, perhaps Alexa, you can. And listening to Ian's experiences there about the public sector, it seems as though perhaps there's a bit of a divide maybe developing in terms of awareness and preparedness to deal with this sustainability challenge, perhaps in the public sector. And obviously, you've been working specifically in financial services and telecommunications. Just wondering what your thoughts are there.
Thanks, David. Look, I agree a lot with Ian here, because there was a moment where all of the telco and banks CEOs were so convinced that the moment they turn on the AI machine or something, the old magic will happen. And it was about 4 or 5 years ago. And they were like sitting there and waiting for this to happen. They hired the hundreds and hundreds. And again, for larger banks and larger telcos, the data organizations can be hundreds of people, yes. Right? And they were like, okay, I have these hundreds of people. Where is this magic? So, and the magic obviously was not happening, because first of all, it's not a dark art. It's actual science. It can be very powerful when it's put to a proper business need or government need, whatever need we need. This is what Ian called the valley of despair. I agree completely. There was a little bit of that. Okay, fine. So the magic is not happening. Let's at least make sure that it works.
Yeah.
And I think during COVID, what we found in the organization that I serve across the region, and what we see is that most of the C-suite and those big companies, especially in the beginning, they went a little bit in a survival mode.
Yeah.
And when you're in a survival mode, you go back to your primal instincts. You know, you talk to your peers physically or over the phone, obviously, as much as possible, and so on and so forth. So it was slightly less of a space mm-hmm. for data and analytics to drive business decisioning as it would be in normal situation. Which is probably back in 2020. In 2020, well, this is where the report was made, actually. And in 2021, I think now it's back on the table. Like, okay, fine, we've made a lot of the big decisions quickly, but let's ensure that what we're doing forward is literally data-driven. So there is no, in a similar vein, there is no CEO in banking or telco industry or tech industry who does not believe data is super helpful, and it is pivotal, right? So everyone is either having it already or trying to build this capability. Again, talent potentially is the problem, but it is absolutely happening.
Yeah, and I'm interested in exploring further something that you and I spoke about recently, Alexei, was this concept that you brought up of the digital band-aid. I mean, of course, a lot of digital band-aids have been applied over the last 18 months. How do organizations and CIOs kind of work together and identify what solutions are band-aids, and which band-aids should they be focused on kind of retaining? And as you mentioned recently, which made me laugh, some band-aids can remain in the enterprise for years and even decades.
Yeah, that's completely true. And this is what we've seen across the board. I can give you a very simple example. When in March 2020, when New South Wales and Sydney went in the first, I think a very, very first lockdown, or the version of a lockdown, obviously I had to start working from home. So I didn't know for how long it is. So I went to Bunnings and bought myself like a foldable table for like $49 or something. And I was like, okay, fine, I'll use it for a couple of weeks, because it's going to be a couple of weeks. And we're 2 years in and I'm still using the same table for my office at home. Not just because it sort of works. It's, and it's not very healthy, and I'll probably spend more money on physio afterwards for to treat my back. But that's the same, in technology, right? And when I'm talking about the band-aids, I'm more talking about the technological band-aids even than digital band-aids, yes. Because all the digital technology that were deployed was standing on some sort of tech on the back of, or behind it.
Yeah,
there's a backbone, and this backbone, the solutions were brought very, very quickly, because they were brought in this warlike environment when, like, for example, if the collaboration needs to happen, people started throwing Zoom immediately, right? So like, okay, we need to put Zoom everywhere. And in 3 weeks, we had all the organizations having Zoom embedded. And then obviously the cybersecurity problem happened with Zoom, which is a public domain, right? This is the whole Zoom bombing situation. And most of organizations has moved on. They're like, okay, fine, we can't use. But that was all very, very. It was a hustle, right, to get there. And now, like, a lot of those decisions were made on the way. Also, like, again, on the cloud migration, there were some very quick migrations to the cloud, because it was impossible to even acquire a server. You could not buy a physical box, because it was just like, as someone was saying, that laptops and servers are the toilet paper of IT. In 2020, it was impossible to acquire.
All right, that's the first time I've heard that expression. Great.
By the way, that was more or less real. And then when you move so quickly, and when you move so quickly to such a complex environment, then you put those band-aids there, and you can't even appreciate what's all the vulnerabilities that might have. So I think some sort of a review, very thoughtful review is will be good when dust settles a little bit around pandemic, which is probably happening now, especially in Europe and US, coming hopefully soon to Australia. like a review of those decisions that were made in a very, very quick way is very helpful to understand what sort of technical debt was brought into organization, what sort of vulnerabilities got exposed, or maybe they were fine. But I'm pretty sure there's what we see now, and again, we see some of those, we uncover some of those band-aids back from the 1990s sometimes, when we look through the systems of the organizations we serve.
Yeah, sure. What are your thoughts on that, Ian? That was a fairly amusing analogy. It's the first time I've heard the correlation between servers and toilet paper. But yeah, I guess it was a bit like that for some organizations.
Yeah, and I have to say, it brought me a bit of a chuckle. So thanks, Alexi. That was quite fun. I think it's fair to say that, at least the part of New South Wales government that I operate in, the Department of Customer Service, had already been well and truly on its transformational journey, had moved from sort of in-house data warehouse to public cloud offerings. It was a matter of just dialing up. And whilst there were always some service delivery or service quality issues when everybody started trying to access online meetings, online processes, online tools, and there were a few little glitches along the way, it was a pretty smooth ride. And I think we were just coincidentally or luckily had been preparing for 3 or 4 years prior to this. So we benefited from the capability uplift as the providers started to increase their capacity. Zoom's been a bit of an interesting one. I've had situations where we could not get video, we couldn't get one of the ministers, we couldn't get Minister Dominello into a meeting because the mismatch of firewalls and security patches and various other things didn't connect through to the event. So we've had a few occasions where people have either pre-recorded or just come in and voice. I've had my own problems in that regard. I had a meeting recently where I had to use my phone to dial in and just had a 2 second delay video trying to catch up a little bit like a spaghetti Western movie from years ago. But broadly speaking, I think we have been very fortunate that we were definitely on that journey and so didn't suffer too much from inconvenience of moving online.
Yeah. Alexi, I just wanted to go back to the, both of you actually, to the talent question. It would seem as though that become an even more acute consideration for organizations or CIOs. And Alexi, you said to me recently, I thought this was fascinating and really illustrative of the times, that the fight for talent will be almost as fierce as the fight for money going forward. And that's, I think that really sums up where we're at.
Yeah, I agree, David. I think it might be even worse than that. So I think the fight, we're used to CIOs, I would say the CIOs are normally used to fighting for budgets and money, right? Because this is always the same report that you're citing from McKinsey. There's an interesting one when 3 years ago, half of the C-suite was thinking that IT is, or digital transformation done for the, to save money, basically for cost savings. These days in 2020, or it was late 2020, like only 10% of them think the same. So if you think about it, the CIOs are well equipped for those, battles over budget and battles over money. However, these days, especially in Australia and New Zealand, the talent pool has thinned massively during we had the borders closed for a year and a half. I mean, it's still technically closed. And having no migration, and obviously we just don't have enough people, especially for those, again, cutting edge places. I'm sure Ian can talk about how hard it is for him to staff his organization. Mm. But also for the commercial organization, this is extremely, extremely hard. And this is, by the way, an interesting one, because at the same time, there's also an insourcing conversation happening. So you can't just rely on your partners as much as you were before. Like you could always, in some countries in Asia, you can still have an IT organization being fully outsourced for 10-year outsourcing contract. You have zero people in IT, which is not going to be the case for the, and they struggled massively, obviously, during COVID. So when you're trying to insource, at the same time, you're trying to beef up your engineering organization or your technical organization. And at the same time, you need to find, by the way, you're not only looking for just talent, you're looking for talent in areas like cybersecurity, DevSecOps, cloud. It is extremely hard. And I don't think there is a silver bullet at the moment. That's the problem.
Yeah. And of course, these IT people, these IT professionals have been really cutting their teeth over the last 18 months and no doubt resulting in some extremely and talented and therefore in demand people. Has that been your experience as well, Ian? What have been your experiences in terms of, you know, just finding the talent?
So it's a very valid point. The demand for technically skilled, capable people has actually, of course, it's increased because as people increasingly move to digital service delivery and increasingly online environments. So there's that. There's also, of course, the fact that we haven't been able to bring in skilled migrants into Australia. So the fight for domestic talent, or the battle for domestic talent, has certainly hotted up. One thing I can say, though, is it possibly a little surprising, is that the attractiveness for government as an employer of tech has actually, I think it's actually improved, partly because government really has played a very prominent role in a purposeful delivery of benefit to community.
Yeah.
So whereas once we might have been at the back of the queue, I don't think government is at the back of the queue. Apologies to my colleagues out there who are fighting for talent right now. I think it's actually moved a couple of places forward. As an employer, because of that purposeful nature of what's done, but I certainly am under no delusion that it's easy to get talent. The contest is certainly real.
Yeah, and you know, as CIO has written about all year, and it's been a perennial conversation on the CIO show as well. The tech leaders, CIOs, people with similar titles, chief data scientist, for instance. Have been elevated within the executive ranks. Ian, do you think that has played out to the degree to which it's perhaps been reported on by people like us? Or do you think that COVID really has cemented that role of the CIO in having a say at the table? And of course, the answer to that question sort of plays into this broader conversation about the ability of CIOs and other tech leaders to maintain the momentum, ensure that what they've done is sustainable in the future.
So I think CIOs certainly have taken a much more prominent role. There's been so much thrown at CIOs because now it really is an existential challenge when you cannot meet in person. There's always been a strong need for systems and processes and platforms, but when you don't have an option, I think the CIOs have shouldered much, much more of that responsibility. So I think they've been the unsung heroes of the COVID pandemic. And I certainly hope that the CIOs are stronger and more resilient as a consequence of it. But also the CISOs, the information security officers, I think have also had much more thrown at them and much more demanded of them in a really difficult environment. And it's difficult not just because we are utterly dependent on productivity and remote platforms, but also because people are trying to build teams and respond to a whole series of different challenges without actually having physically met each other and done the normal sort of norming, forming, storming sorts of things. So I think overall, the role of CIOs and CISOs has certainly become much more in the spotlight. It's hard to say it's more important because it's always been important. Yeah. But I think there's been more appreciation. And I think the people element of building resilient teams to respond to big challenges also means that everyone's had to work in new ways and clearly more power to them.
Yeah. And Alexei, do you think that that's going to be, do you anticipate that will be the case moving forward in some of the private sector industries that you follow? Or do you anticipate that perhaps CIOs will have their work cut out for them, and particularly in ensuring that they can retain, the sort of budget levels that we've seen throughout COVID?
I'm pretty sure it is the case, David. Because, and I was just listening to Ian, I was like nodding, because this is exactly the situation. Before, for most organizations, especially less technology-savvy organizations, the role of a CIO was pretty much invisible. As long as everything works, the CIO was like, yeah, that's normal. And then if something breaks in IT, this is where the CIO got all the blame. And now it's way less that. And I think we even published one of the articles we published recently. The lead was something about that the CIOs will be driving organizations out of this crisis. Like the CIOs will be leading the charge, because now this importance of technology is so much clearer to everyone. Yeah. Like literally, like every executive in any organization understands the importance of technology and digital. You don't need to convince anyone. And they're like, okay, but who is our, it's almost like a war chief, And they're like, okay, who is our war chief here? It's clearly CIO, CISO, and chief data officer. Those people will drive us through this challenge. And I think this their role is way more appreciated now. I agree, it was always important, but now the appreciation is much higher. I think it's the same more or less across public and private sector.
Sure. Well, I think most of our CIO audience would be happy to be described as war chiefs. It's interesting the way that you frame that, Alexi. I mean, you know, obviously CIOs have been utterly critical and certainly in industries like telecommunications, financial services, retail, healthcare, organizations with large numbers of customers, large data sets. You know, we've heard a lot about how important they've been in navigating their organizations through COVID, but it's interesting the way that you framed it, that they're also going to be really, really critical in helping organizations come out of it. I wonder whether there are any particular sort of areas of technology, Alexi, that you think may be less well understood outside of the technology teams that perhaps CIOs would have to work a little harder on, you know, in terms of convincing, you know, the bean counters to maintain support and, of course, you know, financial support being the critical one here?
That's a great question, David. And I think, to be honest, even in private sector, what we find is the most of the IT is a little bit of a black box to the rest of the C-suite.
Yes.
Or it was a bit of a black box. I think now it's getting better. Yeah. And if you ask a random executive from a random organization what IT is, they'll probably think about what we call the end user compute. So they're like, okay, my IT is where my laptop works or not. So that's now it's much, much more appreciation to what IT is. But I think the areas like what Ian mentioned, cybersecurity, data, and again, cloud, those things will need to be explained, and executives need to be educated on that much more than a little bit more of a, you know, traditional understanding of what IT is.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that, Ian? Do you think that there are particular technology areas that will need to be explained? Although, judging from what you said throughout this episode, it seems as though the road was really fairly clear ahead for you in terms of your department, at least.
Yeah. So certainly, there's a whole lot of work being done to lift the capability of New South Wales government, and not just to lift it a little, but to really transform the capability of New South Wales government, which is very, very exciting. Part of the challenge will remain ensuring that people don't think we're actually done. We're not done with cybersecurity. We're not done with data sharing. We're not done with this data thing in general.
Yeah.
Helping people to genuinely understand that big transformations are complex. They come with a whole lot of interdependencies and really need to be done with care. And that it's, in particular with cybersecurity, there isn't ever a done with cybersecurity. All we can do is run fast enough to stay ahead of significant threats.
Yep.
But there isn't any done to it. And I think to some extent, there's no done to transformation, but it just will operate at different speeds. So it becomes a matter of relative prioritization. Are we far enough ahead that we could focus on something else? Or do we need to keep the accelerator down for things like cyber or things like major transformational projects?
You know, that's right. I mean, we talk a lot about, you know, the hybrid work environment that's sort of, you know, flourished throughout COVID, but so many other aspects of interaction are going to be hybrid too, right? I mean, healthcare is going to be hybrid, retail is going to be hybrid. It's not as though, you know, we can anticipate everybody's just going to be going back to visiting their doctors and going back to shopping in stores as usual. It's fairly safe to assume that there's going to be a hybrid sort of element to virtually everything moving forward. I'm not quite sure who I just threw that question at, but either of you could take it up.
Well, maybe if I can offer just a view. I mentioned we've been talking or consulting around with inside New South Wales government about our AI assurance framework. Mm. And with some folks, they actually do have a vision of what that future world would look like. For example, health have talked about just how interconnected and how complex their world will be, in particular in the world of e-health, with Internet of Things being a real thing in a primary care environment or even an allied care environment, and AI being everywhere and data being everywhere and cybersecurity challenges being everywhere.
Yeah.
So as we've been having these consultations, it's clear that we are dealing with today's problems, but we absolutely need to keep an eye on the problems of 2030, 2040, 2050. And what's nice about that is we've actually got now an increased willingness to cast our minds further forward than we typically do. 2030 is a pretty substantial planning horizon for most systems, particularly when you think about cybersecurity. Yeah. We're actually starting to have conversations with the smart infrastructure folks and smart cities and places folks about the world of 2040 and the world of 2050 and what sorts of things we need to start considering. But there is certainly pressure to move now, but we're taking a little bit of time to think a bit more about that world a couple of decades out and even beyond as to what we would need to start baking in.
I completely agree. And what we see is obviously there will be, and we've seen it already when in some of the countries they're a little bit further ahead. We see obviously a bit of a fallback to business as usual, but it's way less than it was pre-COVID for sure. It's like absolutely different. So like we can expect this hybrid everything, with hybrid being the combination of digital and non-digital, with digital even growing further. So and it's like you will always, I mean, we can always experience that from our own experience, but it's just like we just see this happening across the board, across the world, right? It's not just here in this region. So I'm pretty sure that will clearly be the answer. So any solution that the company has put in place or is planning to put in place needs to be quite sustainable because it's for years ahead.
Yeah. Well, guys, interesting times ahead. Really appreciate your time and your insights. Interesting conversation. Let's see what transpires over the next a couple of months. Yes, and as we alluded to in the program, a couple of months in these current times is several years potentially in normal times. Thanks so much, and we look forward to having you back on the CIO show again soon.
Thanks, David.
Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. Coming up next, the latest in our industry vertical series, this time shining a light on property and construction, a sector we could probably all agree suffered as much financial pain and turmoil throughout the pandemic as any. In this episode, we'll talk to analysts and COOs working in the business of bricks, concrete and steel about how they're embracing the latest digital technologies, improving their collection and analysis of data to create more targeted, sustainable and profitable assets across the commercial and retail property sectors. We'll also be discussing how the sector is using technology to create smarter, safer and more efficient work environments. We hope you can join us.